The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you think this idea of Jesus being the only way to God is the most lame-brained, pin-headed, close-minded idea that anyone could ever perpetrate. How could such backwards thinking exist in our modern-day, tolerant 21st century? Well, we will discuss this provocative issue later on in today's program. First, the latest news. Now, one of the disadvantages to having a radio program on only once a week is that it's harder to keep up with the news. News is not the only thing we do on this show. We do a lot of it. But it is hard to keep up with the news when we want to do it. Last week, we aired a repeat broadcast, making it even harder to keep up. I needed to rest my voice after a one-man drama presentation, which means, of course, that now we are 2 weeks behind. So I do want to revisit a news item which had just come up 2 weeks ago. I had mentioned it briefly on the show 2 weeks ago, but today I wanted to give the subject its due. And that's this whole thing about Sarah Sanders and the chicken restaurant because of the way it's getting distorted. The idea of a White House spokesperson being forced to leave a family-style restaurant seems abominable to some. But many in the mainstream media are showing little sympathy for Sarah Sanders. And you will recall, she was asked, along with her family, to leave the Redhead restaurant in Lexington, Virginia. Sarah is being described as a hypocrite, one whose boss, President Trump, would not stand with a same-sex couple in Colorado when they, too, were refused services, supposedly, after visiting a baker. The reason Sarah Sanders was asked to leave the Red Hen was because of the local restaurant's opinion of President Trump, his controversial morals, and those like Sanders who cater to such morals by representing his administration. Although Sanders left peacefully, she did tweet about the incident. This was her tweet. "Last night I was told by the owner of Red Hen in Lexington, Virginia, to leave because I work for POTUS, and I politely left. Her actions say far more about her than about me. I always do my best to treat people, including those I disagree with, respectfully, and I will continue to do so." Well, of course, this tweet brought about national attention and an explanation from the restaurant's co-owner, Stephanie Wilkinson. She said, "I'm not a huge fan of confrontation." Oh, no, Stephanie. Of course not. You just kicked the whole family out of your restaurant, but you're not a fan of confrontation. Okay, I suppose I should just read her own words and not interrupt her. Let me start again. "I'm not a huge fan of confrontation. I have a business, and I want the business to thrive. This feels like the moment in our democracy when people have to make uncomfortable actions and decisions to uphold their morals." So, the so-called hypocrisy of Sarah Sanders is found in an attempt to conflate the Red Hen situation with an incident from July 2012. At that time, Charlie Craig and David Mullins of Denver dropped by Masterpiece Cake Shop to purchase a custom-made cake for their forthcoming wedding. The owner, Jack Phillips, was unwilling to comply, and he was taken to court. The court at that time ruled in favor of the same-sex couple, claiming that Phillips had violated Colorado's anti-discrimination law. Now, just a couple of weeks ago, as you know, in a 7-2 decision, the Supreme Court set aside the Colorado verdict, while refusing to comment on the broader implications, which means this can come up again, joy, oh joy, they did express concern for the baker's religious rights. The majority opinion was written by Justice Kennedy. This was the last thing he did, one of the last things he did before announcing his retirement. He said in the majority opinion, the outcome of cases like this in other circumstances must await further elaboration in the courts, all in the context of recognizing that these disputes must be resolved with tolerance, without undue disrespect to sincere religious beliefs, and without subjugating gay persons to indignities when they seek services and goods in an open market. Well, this court ruling has not made the controversy go away. Those who would defend Sarah Sanders are being asked, in the name of consistency, why they do not also defend Charlie Craig and David Mullins. Josh Rivera, opinion editor for USA Today, put it this way. I'm sorry Sanders was asked to leave a restaurant. That is an embarrassing moment for everyone. But she and all Republicans must realize that her constant hypocrisy and her decision to use a government account to call out the injustice, quote unquote, are the exact reasons why she was asked to leave in the first place. Those are two things she has control over, unlike two gay people who just want to get married. Right. They just wanted to get married. They weren't trying to stir anything up, weren't trying to take this to the courts. They just wanted to get married. Sure. I'll tell one. Now, Lauren McCann of Vox also commented on this. Vox, not to be confused with Fox News. This is Vox News with a V. She said, I happen to believe that food establishments should offer their goods to anyone willing to pay for them. Sanders does not. She thinks it's okay, for example, for a business to hang a sign in their window saying they won't serve gay couples. This is why, on one level, her very public dig at the owner of the Red Hen, which set off a torrent of hate tweets and threats her way, is ridiculous. It's hypocrisy. This is a reference to the way Sarah Sanders answered a question at a White House press conference following the SCOTUS ruling. But it is a distortion of what she actually said, ladies and gentlemen. There is a subtle but important distinction in the wording of the question put forth. Sanders was not asked about somebody hanging a sign stating a refusal of service simply on the basis of sexual preference. The specific question was asked by Michael Shear of the New York Times. These are his words. The lawyer for the Solicitor General's Office for the Administration said today in the Supreme Court it would be legally possible for a baker to put a sign in his window saying we don't bake cakes for gay weddings. Does the president agree that that would be okay? That was the question. Sarah's answer, the president certainly supports religious liberty, and that's something he's talked about during the campaign and has upheld since taking office. However, the hypothetical sign posed in the question was about baking, not serving. We need to back up and look at the specific case of baker Jack Williams, since his actions were the original cause of this discussion. His shop had no sign saying gay people were unwelcome. Neither was he refusing to sell the couple a cake. He wasn't even refusing to sell them a wedding cake. He was refusing to decorate the cake with decorations and writing and icing glorifying gay weddings, not wanting to use his talented abilities to condone an event that would violate his religious convictions. To him, such decorations were part of a baking process. Here are his own words. It's not about turning away these customers. It's about doing a cake for an event, a religious sacred event that conflicts with my conscience. Now, although religion has been the primary defense offered by Phillips and those sympathetic to Phillips, the matter really goes beyond freedom of religion to freedom of speech itself. Even the unreligious should be concerned. Even those who agree with gay weddings should be concerned, inasmuch as the lower court ruling, had it been upheld, might have nurtured strong implications for the entire field of artistic expression. Cake decorators are sought out not merely for writing names and messages on cakes, but the unique artistic ways in which the dessert is decorated. It would have been analogous to the government forcing novelists or film directors to put obligatory gay characters in their stories and write plots that support the practice of homosexuality. For that matter, we could also have seen the reverse. A gay baker asked to decorate a cake with frosted lettering stating that marriage is a union only between a man and a woman. How would you like that? Ladies and gentlemen, freedom to follow one's own conscience, whether for religious reasons, unreligious reasons, artistic reasons, or any reason, must remain protected by our First Amendment. The bakery incident simply does not supply a legitimate comparison with the Red Hen restaurant. The owner was not being asked to condone the Trump administration artistically, religiously, or otherwise. She was merely asked to serve some chicken. Of course, what happened to Sanders was tame compared to what's happening to others. Trump's Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen was shouted out of a restaurant. Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi was harassed by some thugs at a movie theater. I heard a new one on the news just yesterday. I'm reading from the Channel 11 website in Texas. Get a load of this. San Antonio police arrested a 30-year-old man who was captured on video throwing a drink at a supporter of President Donald Trump before walking off with the teenager's Make America Great Again hat and a Whataburger. And of course, it's old news by now what Berkeley has been going through with organizations like Antifa using violence and intimidation to shut down conservative speakers. And these geniuses on the left talk about many of these examples as democracy in action, the usage of our First Amendment rights. Let's be clear. Shouting somebody down while they are trying to talk is not using your own First Amendment right. Neither is harassing someone in a restaurant or refusing them service simply because you do not care for their politics. I won't even say anything about the vandalism, but I will say that all three have been touted as people's free speech rights to be heard in a democracy. In point of fact, such actions do nothing even close to embracing the ideal of free speech. They are designed to intimidate. They are designed to suppress free speech. They are used by people too cowardly to engage in civil debate, people who are aware that their ideas are often indefensible. So they shut down debate instead of allowing it. This should all be clear. But we are living in stupid, mind-numbing times, so it is time once again to point out the truth. When we keep in mind that these same people who endorse such anarchy are also calling for the closing down of ICE, an organization that arrested 475 gang members since May of 2017, we must wonder where the rule of law is headed for our nation. Speaking of the rule of law, I hope the president gets his Supreme Court replacement for Kennedy through the Senate. While the Republican votes should be there at a non-filibuster simple majority over the Democrats, I am concerned about people like Flake, who are on their way out, who hate Trump, and who are eager to distinguish themselves despite their so-called conservative convictions. And then there's always John patting himself on the back for reaching across the aisle, McCain. As for the Democrats, they've become so unglued and so unhinged that Humpty Dumpty will probably never be put back together again. Have you noticed that the Democrats are acting like they just discovered that judicial activism is wrong? They are now worried that Trump's next nomination will be a conservative rather than somebody who simply obeys the Constitution. Right. That's what they've wanted in the past, somebody who just goes by what the Constitution truly says. Of course, they define the Constitution as a living, breathing document. They also define obeying the Constitution as taking precedent from other court rulings into consideration. And for those of you who believe that previous Supreme Court decisions must be upheld, I have just three words: Dred Scott decision. But of course, the precedents they want taken into consideration are Roe versus Wade and the recent strike down of California's Proposition 8, which had the effect of making gay marriage legal all over the United States. Both of those decisions, folks, came about through judicial activism. Just gotta love the consistency of the left. They're concerned about judicial activism, but the laws they are afraid of being repealed were put in place by judicial activism. They talk about defending free speech, but the only people they defend are those who suppress free speech. They call ICE terrorists and protest immigration laws aimed at vetting immigrants from nations that sponsor real honest-to-goodness terrorists. And they refuse to identify Muslim terrorists by their real name, which is, incidentally, Muslim terrorists. They love to talk about the rich paying their fair share, but they freak out when Trump asks the countries of NATO to pay their fair share. They love to talk about election fraud in the hopes that something can be pinned on Trump and the Russians, but they work against any local laws that try to combat real election fraud, such as asking for identification. They warned us for a whole year that Trump would not accept the election results of 2016 only because they were sure he was going to lose. But since he won, they themselves have done nothing but refuse to accept the election results of 2016. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. If you'd like to weigh in on anything I talked about during my monologue, you can always reach me on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel, SIEGEL.net. Regarding last week's rebroadcast where Greg Jarvis talked candidly about depression, James says, great show as always and killer bumper music too. Well, thanks, James. I love playing the bumper music, and I love getting comments about the bumper music. Regarding our program from 2 weeks ago, Al says it's always a treat to hear Mike Friedenberg on the show. Regarding my words about the suppression of free speech in the name of free speech, many people on Facebook liked what I had to say, including Patty, Linda, Brendan, Wayne, Elizabeth, Roger, Lois, Ann, Steve, Scott, Richard, and many others. Regarding my thoughts about the Christian Baker in today's monologue and also the written version in my column for Communities Digital News, David writes, the truth needs to be told and in some cases explained. Keep up the good work, Bob. Well, thank you for that, David. John writes, I have no problem with refusals of service for any reason, nor the subsequent complaints and calling out the refusal. I do have a problem with government compelling any service that denies any individual's reason for denial of service. Freedom gives you the right to refuse service and those seeking said service to seek it elsewhere. Well, John, it may be true that for most reasons, restaurants are allowed legally to refuse service, but I still wanted it on record that the baker was not, in fact, denying service. Also, the refusal of service is not allowed when racial discrimination is discovered to be the reason, since many try to fight for gay rights as if being gay is likened more to a race than a chosen behavior. The fact that the baker was not refusing service becomes even more important. Tom writes, okay, let me break this down for the left on why this article is important for them to understand. The baker as well as the florist were completely fine serving their product to gays. If the gays walked into the baker's shop and said, I want a frozen Disney movie cake, then he would have made it. Just like the florist who knowingly sold flowers to the gay couple for years, it only became a problem when the gays demanded the proprietors use their own God-given talent and the business they built for themselves to push an agenda that disagrees with their morals. To help you see even clearer, the Red Hand simply refused to serve their own product to a paying customer. Now, if Sanders walked in and said she wanted them to cater a pro-life, anti-immigration POTUS birthday dinner, then they could reasonably deny their service to her. Refusing to bake a gay cake or provide flowers to a gay wedding is no different than refusing to provide cake and flowers to the local KKK cross-burning. Do you think a Jewish or black baker or florist should be forced to provide their services to the KKK? Tom also adds a personal note to me. Thanks for fighting the good fight, and I look forward to reading more articles from you. Well, thank you as well, Tom, for fighting the same fight. I would add in his examples, what if there was a Jewish delicatessen and they wanted them to serve pork? Couldn't they say, look, it's against our religion to serve pork. You can buy pork somewhere else. If you want to buy something else that we have here, you're welcome to what we sell. Pork is something we don't sell. I think these illustrations are very important. It's only when we change the illustration that people catch their true thought process. Anyway, regarding the Supreme Court nomination process, Kevin says Dems will fight tooth and claw, hopefully, not literally, until November, and the voters will decide who should win this battle. Do we give Republicans a larger majority, or if we're really lucky, blessed, a supermajority, or does the pendulum swing back to the left as it is wont to do? Tim says, I'm hoping Trump follows Reagan's example and appoints another Kennedy, and perhaps we can have true bipartisan support for a candidate. That always sounds so good, bipartisanship. Let me tell you something, Tim. I could care less about bipartisanship. Supreme Court justices are not supposed to make decisions based upon their personal politics, but only based upon what the Constitution actually says. Even if they don't like what it says, even if they don't agree with what it says, even if they would prefer a constitutional convention to overturn it, their job is to enforce the Constitution, not to try to make it say something it isn't really saying. That idea of honoring the true intent of the Constitution is called being an originalist or a constructionist, something very similar. And yes, those who are originalists or constructionists are called conservative. So be it. As it happens, being an originalist is on the list of conservative values. If Democrats don't share those values, it's just too bad. Some morals and standards and practices are too important to throw away under the guise of sacred-sounding phrases such as bipartisanship. Should slavery have been settled in a bipartisan way? Should we have freed only half the slaves in order to have bipartisanship? We always get lecture A or lecture B from the Democrats, depending on their circumstance. When they win a majority, we hear that elections have consequences. When they lose and rule as the minority party, we hear that the American people want bipartisanship. As if we saw an ounce of bipartisanship from them when they shoved Obamacare down our throats. I don't want bipartisanship. I want President Trump to do what he promised, and he promised judges that would go along with the Constitution's actual wording, not all this nonsense about it being a living, breathing document, which is just code for changing it. Our forefathers did supply a way for the Constitution to be changed. It's called the amendment process. Okay, getting back to the question that I teased you with at the beginning of the show, why is Jesus the only way to God? This is something about Christianity that does not make sense to a lot of people. As you know, if you've been following this show over the years, I was raised Jewish, not Christian. I'll talk to you about how it made sense to me when I first heard this tasty morsel of the gospel when we return. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
You've already heard some of the wonderful customer reviews of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament. But now listen to some highlights from a professional review by Lisa Ruth of Communities Digital News. The book is literally a page-turner that will delight children and adults alike. Readers will find a piece of themselves in Mike, whom Siegel portrays perfectly. He develops the 12-year-old deftly and makes him real to the readers. They will adore Aunt Lorene. They will remember their first love and the pain of betrayal from a friend. Caligula the cat is a wonderfully clever addition to the story. He steals the book with his caustic insight, making all readers wonder just what their own pets would say if they could talk. The real gift of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament is the lessons it weaves amid the adventure. It reminds us of the social and personal responsibility we share and the repercussions of our actions on those around us. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has adventure, entertainment, and some extremely important lessons. What more could you ask for in a book?
Jesus, the only way to God. Now, we have two different strains of audience for the Bob Siegel Show. There are a lot of people who listen who are Christians like myself. The term would be born-again Christian or evangelical Christian. There are others who are very conservative politically and may agree with a lot of the values, but are not necessarily Christian. And I really appreciate both parts of the audience. I want to talk for a moment to the Christians. Everyone else can listen too. But Christians, I'm talking to you specifically right now. This question, this very sincere, very understandable question, why do Christians claim that Jesus is the only way to God? How you answer people is every bit as important as the message itself. You got to remember that people, when you get into these discussions, and religion is usually something very personally, people listen through the lens of their own sensory equipment. For example, when we talk about God being a male and being a father, if some woman or man grew up in a household where their father was abusive or their father was a tyrant or yelled at them or was conditional, only seemed to love them if they got good grades, they're going to start thinking that God the Father is like that. They may know in their head that God the Father is more chilled out and God the Father forgives them and God the Father loves them unconditionally. But knowing something in your head and experiencing it in the heart are two different things. And how we grew up put a lot of things in our heart that it's difficult to break. So we have to be very careful because we say Jesus is the only way. People hear different things. A lot of people, you can just tell by watching the news and looking at the way people respond to Christians, what a lot of people hear is, oh, Christians think they're better than everyone else. They're going to heaven. Nobody else is because we're better than everyone else. The whole message of the gospel is that we are not better than anybody else, that all of us as human beings are in the same boat. Christianity is about forgiveness, not living up to something. And then you have people like me. I was raised Jewish. Now, it was a liberal Jewish family, so I grew up not really believing in the Old Testament or the New Testament. But when I heard that Jesus is the only way to God and only Christians are going to heaven, you know, a lot of Jews define the word Gentile in an unusual way. They take the word Christian and the word Gentile, and they equate it. Now, that's not correct. There are many Gentiles who are not Christians, and of course, there's other religions. But particularly here in America, Jews tend to equate the word Gentile with the word Christian. So when they hear that only Christians are going to heaven, they take that to mean everybody's going to heaven but the Jews, or at least that's what people believe. And they take that as very anti-Semitic. And then, of course, if you add in the fact that, sometimes today Christians just talk in a stupid way, doesn't mean they're really anti-Semitic. But there's been a real honest anti-Semitism in the church. When you look at the Crusades, when you look at the Inquisition, a lot of the Germans in Nazi Germany, some of the very people pushing Jews into gas chambers were going to both Catholic and Protestant churches. So we've got to be very, very careful. These kinds of memories, these kinds of hauntings come back up when we talk about Jesus being the only way. Be very careful with how you answer that question. I used to do campus ministry at the University of California in Santa Barbara. I've done other campus ministries too. This was one of my favorite ones. I was there for 5 years. It was the very late 70s, very early 80s when I was there. And we used to set up an information table. I was already out of college, but only a few years out of college. So people thought I was a college student. I still look pretty young. And we put up signs that would say things like, you tried religion and it turned you off. Now try God. Or atheism is inconsistent. Things that would just provoke conversation. And a guy came up to me one time and he said, I just have to ask you this. Do you believe I'm going to hell if I don't accept Christ? Now, I could have said, buddy, yeah, the Bible actually says that. Now, the Bible does say that. A lot of you don't want to hear that. The Bible does say that. But see, to just quote the Bible without explaining what the Bible's context is can be devastating. So I didn't answer that way. I could have said, yeah, the Bible does say that. If you don't like it, you can lump it, dude. I didn't say that. When he said to me, I've just got to ask you, am I going to hell if I don't receive Christ? I said, that all depends on what we mean when we say receive Christ. He says, well, what do you mean when you say it? I said, sit down. And then you know what? We had a conversation. That's the problem today. People are not having actual conversations. And you don't have to agree to have a respectful conversation. So how we answer is just as important as the message. I wanted to say that to the Christians listening. And now I'll continue talking to everybody who's listening. We need to next point out that we do not claim to be exclusive. We're not saying that this is some club and God's only going to let certain people in. The gospel of Jesus Christ, and the word gospel means good news. It means the good news that we can be forgiven and delivered from our sin. The gospel is for everybody, regardless of your gender, regardless of your race, regardless of your creed, regardless of your nationality. The gospel is for everybody, young, old, rich, poor. This is something God wants everybody to have. It's a free gift that he wants to offer everyone. People can choose it. People can choose to reject it. There are consequences for accepting or rejecting, but it is offered to everybody. But when we just go out and say, well, Jesus is the only way to God, it sounds like an exclusive club, and we have to immediately qualify. It is not exclusive. It is open to everybody. Next, Jesus is the one who said he was the only way, not us. This isn't something we're making up. I remember talking to a student one time out in Arizona. He said, I think this idea of Jesus being the only way is the stupidest, most audacious thing I've ever heard. And I said, okay, that's a teaching that you've heard in the church that you don't like. Let me ask you a question, though. What is your opinion of Jesus himself? You just gave me your opinion of Christians. What is your opinion of Jesus? And then I heard the standard answer, oh, Jesus himself? Oh, I think he was a wonderful philosopher. I think he was a great humanitarian. I think he was a very wise man. I said, well, would you like to know where this audacious idea that Jesus is the only way came from? He says, well, I imagine it was invented by the church over the years. I said, no, it came from Jesus.
This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others sadly do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
Today for people to say, I believe in the teachings of Jesus, but I don't believe in organized religion. The problem is Jesus taught us to organize. When people say they believe in the teachings of Jesus or Jesus was a great teacher, but they don't like evangelism, they don't like the idea of being born again, they don't like the idea that Jesus is the only way to God, Jesus himself taught that. I said this one time to a student at Mesa College in Arizona. And he did what people often do. He tried to alter the premise of the discussion. He said, wait a minute, I'm not convinced Jesus really said that. And then I showed him some verses in the Bible. He says, well, look, you can't trust the Bible. The Bible's been rewritten. It's been mistranslated. I said, well, friend, let's put a peg on that. Let's put a pin in that. Whether or not the Bible can be trusted, whether or not it's the Word of God, whether or not it's accurate, it's a very good question, but that's not what we were talking about at the moment. So let's get back to that. At the moment, you are claiming that Jesus was a good teacher. If the Bible is unreliable, how do you know Jesus was a good teacher? There's no other record of his teachings in any kind of substantial detail other than a few phrases. This is his teaching. So if it can't be trusted, what do you mean? What do you mean when you say that he's a good teacher? Here are some of the verses that I showed him. One is found in Acts chapter 4:12. Now, these weren't the words of Jesus, but these were the words of Peter, one of his disciples who had followed him around for years. This was right after Jesus Christ's crucifixion, and then he rose from the dead and appeared to his disciples. On other shows, I have shown you that that is a fact of history. But for now, we'll put a pin on that. Jesus had risen from the dead. The disciples had been doing some miracles, and a big crowd was gathering out on the streets. Some of the very people that had shouted for Jesus' crucifixion and execution, now they were feeling different. Now they were feeling very penitent and frightened. And they said to Peter, "What must we do?" He said, "Repent and be baptized, every one of you, for your sins." That's early in the book of Acts, chapter 2. But then if you move on to Acts chapter 4, Peter says something else. He says, "There is salvation found in no one else, for no other name has been given under heaven by which we are saved." Now, you got to don't get too hung up when we talk about the name. The name just means that God wants to make sure we have the correct person. I had a person say to me one time, "Well, Jesus is an English translation. The original Hebrew word was Yeshua." Okay, that's true. The point is, we want to make sure we have the right man, the correct Savior. And his name was Jesus. If you want to translate it and call it Yeshua, or translate it into Greek and call it Isos, that's fine. But salvation is found in his name. In John 14:6, Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me." He didn't say, "I am a way, a truth, a life." He didn't say, "I am one of many beautiful paths to God, and there are other great religious leaders." No, he didn't say anything like that. And then in John chapter 3, he talked about the fact that those who reject him will not see life, and that they're going to fall under condemnation. So these are the words of Jesus. Now, who was Jesus to make this claim? Well, Jesus was actually God incarnate. Now, if a man claims to be God and then gets killed, there's really no reason why we should take his claim seriously. But again, and again, this is a fact of history, 3 days after Jesus was executed, he rose from the dead and appeared to some 500 people. That was recorded as an act of history. So we pay a little more attention to what he claimed. And what he claimed and what he taught was that he was God. Now, follow the logic here. People say, "Well, I have a real problem with somebody claiming they're the only way to God." Well, if that somebody is God, shouldn't it be less of a problem? What is so illogical about God deciding he wants to visit this planet, the very people he created, coming down and saying, "Hi, I'm God, and I, God, am the only way to God"? I had a person say to me one time, this was in Oregon after a debate at a university, we were having a Q&A time, he said, "Why one God? Why can't there be many gods?" I said, the concept of multiple gods, the idea of multiple gods, there's nothing wrong with that as a concept. It's just that that's not the way things happen to be. If we happened to live in a universe with billions of gods, that would have been fine. As it happens, we live in a universe that has only one God. And this God has revealed himself a generation after generation. And this collection of records is called the Bible. The Bible makes it very clear that Jesus was God. We've had whole shows on this, but let me review a little bit. John 1:1, the Gospel of John was written by an eyewitness of Jesus and one of the 12 men. There were more than 12, but one of the 12 closest men that followed him around and did ministry with him for 3 years. And this was John. And John wrote, right in the very first chapter of his gospel, right in the very first verse, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." The term "word" in Greek meant more than a spoken word. So this is an idea that the Greeks would have already been aware of. Now, I've heard people say, "Well, wait a minute, how can the Word be with God and be God at the same time?" Look, if we understood everything about God, he wouldn't be much of a God. And yet we know that when he uses the term "word," he's talking about Jesus, because if you just let the Bible explain itself, if you go down to verse 14, right in the same chapter, it says, "And the Word became flesh, and we have beheld his glory, glory as of the only begotten Son of the Father." This is Bob Siegel. I've been on the radio for many years, but let me tell you about a voice I've learned to appreciate far more than any radio announcers. Fred Falduti of Realty Executives All Area. Now, why do I care so much about Fred's voice? Because not long ago, Fred's voice spoke the following words to me.
Bob, I have some good news for you. They accepted your offer.
That's right. Fred Falduti just sold my house. With words like those, who needs radio? Folks, I'm telling you, choosing the right realtor is no small task. Fred took a personal interest in my situation, treating me less like a customer and more like a member of the family. And Fred's been doing this since 1994. Realty Executives All Area has sold thousands of homes locally.
Our footprints are throughout San Diego County, and we are proud of our accomplishments of assisting home sellers and buyers like you. Over the years, we've managed hundreds of real estate transactions and have encountered just about every kind of challenging situation possible.
That's it, folks. That's the voice that will sell your home. Whether buying or selling, the man you want is Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area. 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com. We radio hosts love to talk, but let's face it, when have we ever sold your home? Fred Falduti will.
Bob Siegel's novel, Push the Winds Around, is now available in both ebook and print copies. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Talk about a good read. Have you ever thought, if only God would allow me to go back in time to right my wrongs? What if I could change those decisions I made? What would be the outcome? Would the changes make a difference? If you have ever thought about that, then this book is your challenge. The story is so good you won't want it to end. You'll see why it deserves 5 stars. Bob Siegel, you've done it again. Can't wait for the sequel. Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
A man claiming to be the only way to God will sound ludicrous unless he actually is God. And the idea of a man claiming to be God will sound ludicrous unless his claim happens to be true. Jesus did claim to be God. After making that claim and being executed, he rose from the dead, proving that he was exactly who he claimed to be. In John 8:58, Jesus was talking to some of the ancient rabbis. And he referred to Abraham as if he had known Abraham personally. The problem is Abraham had lived several thousand years ago. And they said to him, you're not even 50 years old. You're telling us you had a conversation with Abraham. Jesus said something very interesting. He said, before Abraham was, I am. Now, even in those days, that would not have been correct grammar. In Greek, the language they were speaking, he would have said, before Abraham was, I was. But he said, I am, for a very specific reason. If you go back to the book of Exodus, where God is talking to Moses at the burning bush, and Moses asks God for his name, God says to him, I am that I am. Go and tell the Pharaoh, I am sent you. That is the name for God. And everybody around Jesus understood that he was calling himself God because they picked up stones to throw at him as a heretic. And hypothetically, if he was not correct in making that claim, under the law of Moses, he would have deserved to be put to death. For a man to claim to be the God of Israel, the God of the universe, that's heresy, unless he happens to be speaking the truth. Another interesting one, and this too is found in the Gospel of John. A lot of these are found in the Gospel of John. The divinity of Christ was one of his themes. In John 14, imagine this is coming toward the end of Jesus' ministry. He's very soon going to be going to the cross and leaving these guys. They've been following him around for some 3 years, and he keeps talking about his heavenly Father. I have this relationship with the Father. You can have a relationship with the Father. And Philip, one of his disciples, finally says, Lord, show us the Father already. Keep talking about the Father, how much you know the Father. Show us the Father and we will be satisfied. And Jesus looks at him and he says, have I been with you so long, Philip, and yet you still don't know me? If you've seen me, you have seen the Father. Somehow the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit are all one God. Three different persons, but they make up one God. So let's back up. When we say that Jesus is the only way to God, we are not claiming an exclusive club. We're claiming that any human being, regardless of race, religion, skin color, gender, nationality, anybody's welcome because God has forgiven everybody's sins, but they've got to be willing to turn from their sins. So we're not claiming to be exclusive. We're claiming to welcome everybody, but there is a choice to be made. And there are consequences if you don't choose this. Now, Jesus is the one who said he was the only way. Jesus is the one saying he's the only way. I'm not saying it. Jesus is saying it. I'm pointing to the Bible and showing you where he said it. Who was Jesus to say this? Jesus was God. I know there's all kinds of questions that could come up about the Trinity. There are whole radio programs that go into that in much more detail, make a case for the Trinity. I invite you to go to my website, type in the word Trinity. You can find it. By the way, if you're Jewish, you can find the Trinity found in the Old Testament on my website too. The next on this question of Jesus being the only way, the issue is not doctrine, but righteousness. People act as if God's going to give them some kind of an exam when they get to heaven. But that's not true. I mentioned that I did campus ministry for years out at UCSB, University of California, Santa Barbara. I had a person come by my table one time. First thing he said was, don't you ever go to class? I said, well, I've graduated college. I'm a full-time campus minister, so I get to enjoy being out on this campus all day without ever going to class. We laughed about it. It was kind of a lighthearted conversation, which was good because we were about to get into something heavy. And he says to me, you know, I'd like to get high in a joint once in a while, but I would never think of setting up a table and putting up a sign and telling people that they need to get high on joints too. In other words, where did I get the nerve to say that what works for me, Jesus, must work for him as well, or else? I said, well, friend, if Jesus was just some joint to get high on, if Jesus was just some personal trip, I would agree with you. But let me ask you a question. You told me what you would do if you had a table regarding joints. If you knew the cure for cancer, would you share it with people? He says, well, of course I would. I said, well, someday they're going to be able to cure cancer. When that day comes, will you agree that that's the cure? Would you even be willing to put up a table and put up a sign or hand out literature? He says, well, yeah, sure. I said, supposing somebody came up to you and said, I don't think this cure for cancer is the only cure. I think aspirin's the cure for cancer. I think vitamin C is the cure for cancer. What would you say to them? He said, well, I'd tell them that that's nonsense. The doctors have done an investigative study and they've done a lot of experimentation and this is the cure for cancer. I said, well, that's very close-minded of you. Maybe penicillin is the cure for cancer. Maybe vitamin C is the cure for cancer. See, this whole idea about an open or closed mind, the whole purpose of having an open mind is to examine the data. But after you examine the data, you eventually come to a conclusion, and yes, you close your mind. Guy said to me, I can't accept Jesus because it's too close-minded. I asked him one time, friend, are you open-minded enough to consider the possibility that Jesus may be the only way to God? He says, absolutely not. I said, you can't even consider that? He says, no. I said, why not? He says, because that's close-minded. I said, that's not the way it works. An open mind says maybe there's one way to God, maybe there's 10 ways to God, maybe there are no ways to God, maybe there are 3.5 ways to God. Or maybe, just maybe, at a certain time in history, God came down and said, hi, I'm God, and I, God, am the only way to God. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170, The Answer, is sponsored by Bob Siegel.